Hello and welcome to a podcast brought to you by The Religion of Aston Villa.
We're a social media account on Twitter and Facebook that wants to get our voices out there and heard, so please join us.
You're right, guys, and welcome to another episode. Today is the episode, obviously, for the Everton review. But again, due to the small turnover of games, we're also going to have the Crystal Palace preview as well. So tune in for the start of the episode for our reaction for the Everton match, and then tune in for the end of it for our thoughts on the upcoming game on Sunday against Crystal Palace. But before we jump straight into it, Brad, over to you as always to see what the results, what everyone thought about your poll question.
Hello, guys. Sorry if I do sound a bit rough. I have got a cold. I haven't got COVID, I've rechecked, so before we worry. but the poll was, will Jack play again this season? Obviously, he played today. Actually, I think you said no on this one.
I did, because the amount of times that the club has lied, but he's only out for 3 weeks. 4 months later,
we're still waiting. It was yes, will it, with a 66% record. So tally me up for a for that one. when we saw the lineup, what was you thinking?
I thought we knew it was going to be unchanged. Apart from obviously Watkins, who got sent off, I really wanted Luiz to be dropped because I didn't think after the last game he deserved a starting lineup. So Nakamba, in my opinion, should have started, but that lineup wasn't to grumble at. It was enough to win, not the last game, the game before that. In my opinion, we were unlucky, to lose against United. I thought the score flattered them. So, I was sort of happy with it. The last time we played Everton, we pretty much played the same team, bar Watkins. I was very happy with Davis that got the call. A lot of people said that we should have called Wesley and stuff, but I think Davis has deserved this all season. So, I was excited to see him actually start a game to see what he can do within 90 minutes. But, the natural lineup. Yeah, I thought we could have done something with it.
Yeah, as you said, that Davis got the nod ahead of Wesley, which was, I think, always a given with how long Wesley's been off. There was a lot of kids on the bench, which is a good thing. And the only thing that was noticeable, obviously, well, two things, was obviously Jack being on the bench, but also Steer being in front of Heaton, obviously, with the rumours of Heaton going back to United.
Yeah, I think he's... Dean Smith said that his contract's being spoken to by the sporting director, blah, blah, blah. So maybe he is on his way out.
Yeah. Such a shame, really. But we move on. He's a good keeper, to be fair. Going to the first half, I mean, I'll just run over some key little highlights to the game. So minute one, I know it's not really a big thing, but we had a corner for Barker, took a corner and it was absolutely dreadful. Like, he didn't even get past the first man. Minute 16 was when Mings had the diving header, which, you know, would have been 3 points looking back now, but it is what it is. And then minute 20, we was looking at the Al Ghazi shot, which I think he should have been better as well. And then minute 36, which was two things happened in that, and it was Barker twice. The first chance he had, he should have got a shot in and he couldn't. And then the second one, he hit the ball against himself. So that kind of sums up Ross Barkley. Game today, to be honest with you. And obviously, the only thing that was a big thing, apart from obviously Mings's miss, is obviously Cash getting injured in the around half time, around the 46 minutes. And obviously, Elmo got subbed in. So that was probably the biggest thing to take away from the first half, was obviously losing Cash. But for me, I felt like we dominated the first half, to be honest. There was just no clear chances.
Yeah, I mean, you've obviously said pretty much what we need to about the first half, but it was one of those games that we actually dominate. Well, not dominated, but I don't think we were really that tested, and we were really, really comfortable. We didn't go into the game worried. We just sort of forgot about the United game and just got on with it. And I was quite happy to see how we were playing. I was a bit annoyed, like you said, that Mings missed that chance from about 8 yards, I think it was. It was quite close. It would have been good to score and go into half time, and Mings hasn't scored for a while. And yeah, I thought it would have been good. But going into half time, I was in a good place, but we were in a good place against United, and you saw how that panned out. But yeah, and as well, you said about Barkley, it's getting to the point now where I think he's playing his last few games for us, if I'm going to be honest. I think the playing for the future is gone now. I think he's pretty much literally playing the last few games. He won't play against Chelsea for us. So is his last game against Crystal? We've got one more game that he could play after Crystal Palace, and I think that's it.
Spurs, yeah. We've got Palace, Spurs and Chelsea. Obviously, he can't play against Chelsea. So we cannot play any more home games now.
Yeah. So, yeah. So I think we're pretty much seeing the end of it now. And not saying that we're not going to buy him, because obviously I don't know who we're going to buy and stuff. But if he pulls something special out the last two games, we'll see. But as it stands, if you put a poll up now saying, do you buy him? Unfortunately, I'll probably say no, unless the deal is ridiculously cheap. I know I said the other day that I'd buy him and all that. I would at the time, but he seems to have had that one good game, and that's been the end of that, as in the second half of the season. And it's frustrating, but we move on. Obviously, we'll find someone to replace him. Obviously, I'm not going to go into it, but we've been linked to quite a few attacking midfielders. Two guys from Norwich, obviously, Bundina and Cantwell and stuff like that. So we're getting linked with players that will probably replace Barkley. And to be fair, we need someone that actually signed for us and not on loan. You might get the extra 10% out of them. But unfortunately, the Ross gamble hasn't paid off. But if he can put something in it for the next few games, then you never know. Sorry, I'm going off track here. We should be talking about the first half, and I'm talking about if he signed Barkley or not. But I thought we played very, very well in the first half. We didn't take our chances, but we were comfortable. We weren't really challenged in any part of it. And I was quite happy going into the second half. The massive blow with Cash, by the looks of it, this could be Cash's season over. If it's a hamstring injury, I don't think we'll see him in the Villa shirt again this season.
Going into half time, is there any subs or changes or formations you'd switch to?
No, because we played very well. There were certain players that obviously didn't affect the game, like Barkley. I don't think Choré had a very good half. Luiz, iffy. No, I just think it was a solid half. So it was unfair to say that anyone's sort of worth taking off or anything, and especially when it's only half time, and you would have thought you would have got an extra 10-15% out of people before you start making subs. But Smith loves making subs late, so I knew nothing was going to happen at half time. But I was quite happy with how it was.
For me, we have a young lad on the bench who I think we should bring on. I reckon he could be a star. Goes by the name of Jack Grealish. For me, he should have come on for Ross. I thought Ross was very poor. But that, like I said, no one ever makes a change at half-time unless it's forced. Going into the second half, again, like I said, there weren't that much happening, to be fair. I mean, pretty much within the first 15, 16 minutes, there was nothing. And then literally, I think the only real thing that we did was swap Ross for Ramsey, which is around the 64th minute. But before that, it was pretty much most of it being on Everton, attacking us. Like I said, I thought it was a game of two halves. We won the first half, they won the second. And there was some good little play between Davis and Ramsey. I remember one where Davis did a big chest and Ramsey hit it, but it went out for a corner. But then again, nothing really happened. And then Jack come on for Traore, which for me, I thought he should have come on for El Ghazi, because I thought Traore was, he's a bit unpredictable, as we all know. But even when Jack come on, really, there was a good couple of runs he did and nothing really, it was all centre of the park, all Everton. And then the only thing I can really say, which was in the injury time, which was a brilliant piece of play by Richarlison when he took it off Elmo. And then Mings did an absolute world-class stoppage that took him and Martinez out, but that would have been a tap-in for Calvert-Lewin. So you've got to give credit where it's due. But like I say, that first, that second half, from a Villa standpoint, there was really nothing other than a jack couple of good runs.
To be fair, yeah. Second half was like the half against United. We seem to have think we've done enough to win the game, even though we weren't winning against Everton. And I just think we've probably thought to ourselves, oh, we can come out and do it, and we didn't. And to be fair, Everton took a bit of hold of the game. Like you said, Everton had the better half in the second half than we had in the first half. There was a few decent bits. There was a few rough bits. Bit of concern when Mings and Martinez clashed because they were obviously down for a bit. Mings might have been lucky for a dodgy tackle he did with the
hold. I agree. Yeah, I thought that could have been a red, to be fair. I wouldn't have argued.
Yeah, so we got lucky with that. We never normally get lucky with stuff like that. So that was good. It was nothing really to shout about, if I'm going to be honest. The second half didn't really bring anything. I think we missed the dogginess of having Watkins up front. There's nothing against Davis. He's a completely different player to Watkins. So I can't moan at that. It's just Davis doesn't have maybe the not the killer instinct, but he just doesn't have that extra edge that Watkins does. But that's what £30 million gets, you know, ain't it, like. So Davis did a job, but he was feeding on scraps. Obviously, Watkins deals on scraps, but he sort of makes his own chances, and Davis probably short of service. And then when we finally brought Jack on, it was really good to see Jack playing. It was really, really good. Probably not enough time for him to change the game. He's more likely to change the game by coming on a good part of the game, like as in if he starts a match or something. But it was good to see him have a few minutes. Obviously, we haven't seen him in the Villa shirt for such a long time. You sort of thought to yourself, how bad is this injury? So it'll be interesting to see what he does in the Crystal Palace game then. Like, because he would have had a good few more days of training. So it'll be interesting if he's ready or is he going to be a sub again. If he's a sub again, I'm not going to mind because I really don't want to rush him back. So in my opinion, if we do have him as a sub for the last three games, that's not a problem. I just don't want to rush him and then we mess him up for next season. So Dean Smith, don't rush him.
After the game, you know, thoughts, what was your thoughts and opinions, you know, looking after back overview of the game?
A point to point. Another, we finally got this clean sheet. Christ. So we finally got this clean sheet. That means we're on 15 clean sheets. We're on level with Brad Friedel. We have three games left to beat it. And if we're going to, it's going to be Sunday. I can't see us keeping a clean sheet against Chelsea or Spurs. So in my opinion, we need a clean sheet on Sunday for us to beat the thingy. I hope we do because, in my opinion, signing another season, Martinez deserves it. And obviously a back five at times have played world-class this season. So it's really, really good to see that. So there's positives to come out of the game. Point, clean sheet. Davis got some minutes. Ramsey got some more playing time. So there is positives, but there's also a few negatives. We could have easily won that game if we switched on in the second half as well. We're still carrying certain players throughout the game. Name dropping like Barkley. We're still sort of carrying Louise to a point. And I'm not saying Louise is a bad player. I'm just saying the last few games, he needs to wake up because on his day, Louise is one of our best players, like one of our best players. And I'm sure I read on Twitter some reporters saying Man City is unlikely to activate the buyback clause. I'm not saying I believe it, but if that doesn't happen and we sign a new contract, then I'm really, really happy. But he needs to go back to the Louise that we all know that pretty much helped us stop up rather than the one that we have got at the moment that seems to let the game go past him. So there's probably more pros, in my opinion, there's more pros than cons getting a 0-0 draw from Everton. Everton are a top team still. They've got one of the in-form strikers in the league. In my opinion, a striker that's going to the World Cup for England. A point and a clean sheet. I mean, I said we'll get a draw when we did the podcast about the game, so I'm happy with the draw. A bit annoyed that we could have won it, but like I said, there's more positives than negatives, in my opinion.
I mean, yeah, I thought a draw was a fair result. I mean, taking 4 points from Everton this season is a good, you know, but we can't grumble at that. The only thing I've got, well, I've got more things to say about Sky Sports than I have the actual
the
game itself. I mean, the commentator, I think it's Andy Hinchcliffe, must be on the Everton payroll because he was so biased. I mean, he was saying that, you know, it was a... no one won the first half. And I was like, no, we won the first half. And then he went on for a good 5-10 minutes about Calvin Lewin losing his air bubble. I am not even making that up. It genuinely, it was absolutely nuts. So that was my first little dig at Sky. And then the next one, I don't know if you saw it, but Jamie Redknapp said, and I quote, this is talking about Villa, obviously, they got the recruitment badly wrong last year, but that's why they struggled. Souness replied, "Well, yeah, but now they've got a solid base with Mings, Konsa, and Target." So I don't know if he realizes this, but all three were signed last year. So yeah, I thought it's just nuts. It's absolutely ridiculous. And my last thing, like, so well, the only thing I've got to say about Villa itself, on a serious note, is it's just the same old story again of having isolated strikers. Elgar, we have to kind of accept that El Ghazi and Traore are not like a creative supporting winger. That they're not. They're kind of more of attacking, selfish wingers. And I think that's probably where our problems lie, if I'm honest, especially when Jack doesn't play. Like I said, that's my only real little thing I can say looking back on the game, because for me, a point's great against Everton. I mean, yeah, okay, then we probably should have won it with Mings, but in the same essence, Mings stopped a goal pretty much from being a tap-in, so, you know, it kind of equals itself out. And I don't know if you noticed as well, which I don't understand why he does it, but Duncan Ferguson was holding the sub sign, you know, when it comes up like 10 for 17 or whatever. He was doing it. I don't know why. I can understand why no one would argue, but I don't know if you noticed, but for me, I just found it hilarious. I was like, seriously? Is he the fourth official now?
Yeah, I did notice that, but everyone just carried on as if it was normal. I completely agree with the Sky stuff. What I also don't like about Sky, and this frustrated me a lot, was they seem to be bothered more about the Liverpool-Man United game.
Oh, yeah. Picture in picture.
Well, they even went off the game and just shown them coming into the stadium.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? Like, what's going on? And then at halftime, they spoke more about that game. And then after the game, they went straight to the United-Liverpool game. And it's obviously, yeah, because of the kickoff times and stuff, but it seems to me Sky was like all against these big clubs because of the league. And now suddenly they're all about big clubs again. And I'm like,
yeah, that's the point.
Villa Everton is one of the most played fixtures in the Premier League ever. Yes, it was a 0-0, but there's a lot of history about this game, and you should treat every game the same. But all they seem to be bothered about is the Liverpool and the United game. That's all they were bothered about. And it just really frustrated me, because every second they could say something about it. Oh, I think the coaches got through the fans. And I'm like, I don't care. So that was a massive gripe of mine. But I'm sort of getting used to that now, because the amount of commentary we have like that. I mean, I like Gary Neville and Jimmy Redknapp on Sky, but when they commentate on their own teams, it's quite biased and frustrating. They're like a cheerleader. So because both their teams are playing, they seem to get all the airtime. And it just wound me up, because it seemed to me like they couldn't wait for the Villa game to finish so they could all go on about this Liverpool United match.
Yeah, that's true. The picture in picture stuff, and then the opening that you said, I was watching Bruno more than I was Jack at one point. It was just, it's ridiculous. Player ratings. What's your player ratings for the back five?
This is a tough one, but Martinez gets an 8. Solid, very good keeper, and very well done for getting the record. Hopefully he'll go on to beat Brad's. Mings and Konza 7. Target 8. Cash 6, unfortunately, but obviously he only played one half. Target again, Mr. Consistent. He's getting to the point now where I'm not going to vote him for player of the season, but he's in my probably top five players of the season. Target. He's just smashing it. And Konza and Mings, they did what they had to. They got a clean sheet, but Mings, a bit shaky.
Martinez, I gave an 8. Well done for getting the record, as you said. And he kept us in it with a point blank save as well. Cash, I gave a 6. I thought he was lively before his injury. Konza, I gave a 7. He did get ball watching quite a bit, so did Mings. But he did okay, to be honest with you. Mings, I gave an 8. He was a 7 until that superb block, which stopped Calvin Lewin doing a tap him. And Target, I gave a 7. Yeah, like you said, he's consistently good. Do you know what I mean? Like, the 7's like his minimum nowadays. In your midfield, 3.
McGinn, probably the best performance I've seen McGinn for quite a while, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Played very, very well. I was really happy with that. So he gets an 8. Thought he's very good. Really, really good to see. Louise, I keep slating him, so people probably think that I hate him. I don't hate him. I just think he's playing really poorly at the moment. So he gets a 6. I mean, well, 5.5. And Barkley, 5. I just think, again, he's getting to the point now where he's the last few games of his loan, you can sort of tell. And he's sort of just petering out now. And it's a massive shame because he started his Villa journey so, so good.
Louis, I gave a 6. I thought he did better than last week, but I think that's because he couldn't do much worse, if I'm honest. But he did give the ball away cheaply, quite a lot of points. I thought he was playing for Everton. He gave the ball away that much. Barkley, I gave a 5. Missed chances, poor passes, lethargic. Didn't even let me talk about set pieces. Got a 5. And McGinn got an 8, man of the match for me. I know he had the same rating as Martinez, but he was more of his old self. Winning tackles, running the ball, he was pretty much everywhere. The front 3.
Davis gets a 6. Don't get me wrong. We always say they're feeding on scraps, but Watkins is used to it and Watkins can pretty much make a chance for himself. Davis didn't have the support maybe he wanted to. Maybe he would have had a different and better game if Jack was playing, but you got to play with what you've got. So unfortunately, he gets a 6 from me. Al-Ghazi, 5.5, didn't really do anything for me. And Torres, a 5.5, again, he didn't really do anything for me. We just never really had a threat up front until Jack came on and made a little bit happen. But this is where we need to strengthen next season.
Davis, I gave a 5. I've just put, we miss Watkins. I don't think we need to say much more than that. Al-Ghazi, 5, good couple of runs, but not much to share about. Traore, I did give a 6, to be fair, because I thought he did more than Davis and Al-Ghazi combined. So, yeah, sometimes he was tripping over himself, but he was still going forward, and he still did some. He had some, you know, half shots at least. Subs, Elmo, Ramsey and Jack.
Elmo, solid 6. He always comes on and does a job on it, let's be honest. Ramsey, I think Ramsey's, the amount of time he's getting, it makes me think he's going to play a lot next season. And to be fair, he came on and got a 6. He probably did more than Barkley did in the 20 minutes that he was on. So Ramsey gets a 6 for me. And Jack, I'm going to say 6.5. It's hard for him. He's just came back, but it was just, he could have played crap. But he didn't know. I'm just saying he could have played crap and I wouldn't have cared. Just to see him back on the pitch is good enough for me. Just to show that he's back, because we have really missed him.
Elmo gave a 6. I mean, he's no Cash. He's night and day difference. There was a good couple of crosses I will give him. But just what Cash does, it's you know, it's a massive improvement to last season. No offence to Elmo or Gilbert on that. So I gave Elmo a 6. Ramsey, I gave a 6 as well. 1 point above Barkley, as you said, he did. He was more lively. He was more forward. He had a lot more pace to him. And Jack, I gave a 7. I know it might seem a bit high, but there was points where he had the ball and he run a good 30, 40 yards with the ball dribbling like the old Jack. And there was a point on the left-hand side where they had 3 players on him. And that was the only way they could get the ball off him. So it's good to see him back.
It was really good to see him back. And I know he's not fully fit now. I know that he's not going to change our season. But it was just to see him back just makes me sort of can't wait for next season. Hopefully he'll be in next season. His agent needs to calm down. I'm getting a bit sick and tired of him keep saying stuff. But hopefully he's here next season because it's what if he was still fit, where would we have finished?
10th or 11th, I think he'll stay. But we ain't going to drop lower than that. So for me, he's staying regardless, to be honest with you.
Unless someone stoops up 100 mil, no one's going to take him.
Yeah, that's what I think too. Crystal Palace then, jumping straight in.
Straight into it.
Crystal Palace preview. Lineup, what would you go? Because I'm a bit different this time, to be honest with you.
Oh, I'll bet you're going to play three. You're going to play three at the back again. I've not heard you say that for a few episodes.
I'm not. No, it's a bit different. It's a bit all different.
Okay. Oh, just before I do, United have just lost 4-2 against Liverpool.
Yeah, I've just seen.
So they're creeping up, and this is dragging West Ham down a little bit. And West Ham, if they're not lucky, and Spurs and Chelsea start winning their games, West Ham could finish as low as 7th. So, yeah, that'll be interesting. But so, what would I play against Crystal Palace? In my opinion, out of the 3 games that we have left, this is the game that we should be winning to get 3 points. You know, this may be our last 3 points of the season.
I agree.
Just before I start my lineup, I would not start Jack. Purely because I don't think he's ready. I will not be rushing him back. So, no, I won't be starting him. I will, obviously, Watkins comes straight back into the team. I think that's a given. I don't think no one will not play him. So it'll be Martinez in goal. Hopefully he can push for another clean sheet. It'll be because cash is out, you're looking at Elmo being the right back. But it'll be good to see Kessler play right back against Crystal Palace. They're a lower team. What's going to be like, why can't we do it? But he'll probably play Elmo at right back. Then the other back three is fine. Obviously, Konza, Mings and Target. And then midfield, after that display with Barkley, I would have thought he would have played Ramsey or the other young kid. But I think Ramsey might get a nod ahead of Barkley. I think Louise will play, even though it should be Nakamba because Louise has been carried a bit. And McGinn will keep his spot because he's played really well over the last 2 games. And then Watkins up top with Toure and Alghazi due to the lack of depth at the moment due to injuries. But as much as people say, oh, we should start Jack, don't push him. Because even Dean Smith said after the game, he's doing the softly approach. So I don't think it's worth a risk.
I've gone Martinez. I've gone Kessler at right back. Yes. There's no point playing Elmo with 3 games to go. Last game, just for a swan song, maybe, but I think we should start blooding the youth now.
Yep.
Konza, Mings and Target. I would go Louise and McGinn. I mean, we played against the left side, no disrespect to Palace, but surely Louise can do better against an ageing midfield. Do you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
Louise and McGinn. Out wide, I've got Alghazi and Ramsey. As you said, Jack is back, but he's not going to play a full 90. And I've gone Traore through the middle. Now, I know it sounds a bit silly, but I know people keep saying that he's one-footed, and I thought he was one-footed, but I was watching some highlights earlier of his goals, and he scored the one that he did against Albion with his weaker foot, the one where it was like a really good finish. And there's been a few good right-footed finishes, even though he is left-footed. But I'd like to see him play through the middle where we haven't got to worry about him tracking back, defending. He can just be in the hole doing what he wants to do. And I think that way we're not really carrying him when he's having a poor patch. And then obviously Watkins up front.
Yeah, I can 100% agree on the facts about bringing some of the youth in. You said, Almo's contract runs out, and you're rightly saying, why are you wasting another cap for Almo when Kessler, in my opinion, and obviously you think as well, he's getting game time for the under-18s or under-21s, so he's ready. So, yes, get him in for 90 minutes. You're not the captain of the under-23s for no reason. So, surely, I mean, he's training with the first team, so why not give him a chance? But this is the time of season where you normally see teams give youngsters a few goes. So, I am with you saying that, and hopefully that they will give him some time. It'll be really, really good to see our youngsters through.
How would you set up? How do you expect the game to go? You know, anything you should pinpoint, anything like that?
Well, we're against the dinosaur, aka Roy Hodgson. So, route one, they're just going to hoof it up to Ben Teke. Let's be honest.
Yeah, so that's what. Yeah,
that's all I'm expecting. That's literally all I'm expecting. And to be fair, Ben Teke scored in his last game, if I remember rightly.
He did. Yeah, I watched it earlier. He did.
I'm not going to lie, the fall from grace with him is quite upsetting because of how good he did for us. It's really harsh to see him not fall apart, but he's not what we know of. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, just speaking on Ben Teke, I'm kind of glad he's fell because as much as I loved him at Villa and it upset me when he left, the fact that he was handing in transfer requests every year, like those birthday cards, trying to get a move, and he got his big move, didn't work, and now he's at Palace pretty much. I'm sure his contract's up this year as well. I might be wrong. I'm glad, to be honest. I'm going to say this now, and he's going to bang an hat-trick away in it now I'm saying this, but I loved him. Like I say, it was like it hurt when he left because he was like the best player in a very long time we've had up, you know, up front. Like I said, I don't really remember the York days, so I can imagine that hurting other fans, but there wasn't really anybody like Ben Teke for me. Maybe Tammy in the Championship comes to mind where, you know, like there was as good as he was. And I always thought that he would kind of be like the next Drogba because he was so strong and he had a bit of pace and he could finish. He just had an all-round game, and I thought, like, if we could keep him. I mean, he did pretty much keep us up single-handedly for years. And then, obviously, he left, and we did the French project, and it just flopped, and we went down. But, yeah, I'm kind of glad he is where he is, and I don't want him back if the chances ever comes up, to be honest with you. I just, you know. For me, I just think we need to dominate the ball and just go for the juggler from the off. I mean, like you said, it's a aging squad with an aging manager. All of them are pretty much going at the end of the season. I mean, I'm sure I've read there's about 10 or 11 players, contracts up. You know, they're not going to go down or they're not going to move up. So similar to us, but we've still got the chance to break the top 10. So hopefully they're already on holiday and we can have this wrapped up by half-time.
It would be nice. I mean, I'm just looking at their team now. Like you said, I didn't realise how aging their team was until I look at it. Christ. And there's also a lot of players that are, as you said, the contracts are in that as well. The only danger man, I would say, have you got Wilfred Zaha, but I don't know if he's fit. But then you've got Christian Benteke up top. You've got Eze, who's probably their best player, in my opinion.
By miles.
But then you've got the rest of these players that are quite old. James McArthur, Mitrovic, however you say his name, that midfielder. Milivojevic, or however you say it. And then you've got Andros Townsend, Gary Cahill. I mean, it's like it's like the dad's army. Like, they are quite old, but hopefully they won't bite us. But if you look at the stats, for goals, Sahar's the top goal scorer with 10, Benteke with 8, Eze with 4. So straight away, they're the three danger men. Assists, Eze, he's got 5. Townsend, 4. Former Villa player, Jordan Ayew, with 3. But yeah, like you said, hopefully by half time, we've got 1 or 2 goals. I mean, this should be, like I said, out of the 3 games we've got left, this should be the game that we've been looking at to get the 3 points. Because in my opinion, if we win our last 2 games after this or lose our last 2 games after this, it's not the end of the world, but let's get 3 points against Crystal Palace. Like we said against Benteke as well, he is getting slightly old, but because he's Villa, ex-Villa, you probably do expect him to do something, i.e. get sent off or score like he did last season. I have got a bit of a soft spot for him as well, because like what you said, in the Lambert days, he did help us stop up. He was ridiculous for us. He kept so he scored some really good goals. I still remember a last-minute penalty against West Brom. Udall's just unreal. I remember an overhead kick against Norwich they hit first time. A goal against Spurs that pretty much kept us up as well at White Hart Lane. There was so many memories that Benteke did. He obviously wanted to go for better things and it didn't work out for him. The real reason why Benteke hasn't left Crystal Palace for such a long time is because no one's prepared to pay his wage. I believe he's on 120k. I don't know how he's on that much. How he's on that much. That's the only reason he's there still. If he was on about 60 to 80, more clubs might have looked at him, but no one's paying that for him. But yeah, so I am expecting a game where we can sort of take control early doors and score a goal or two. It is against Route 1 Football. They've got through a few tricky wingers, but hopefully we've got enough in the bank. I would have felt more confident if Cash was playing, but obviously we'll see what right back we play. But even if it's Almo, I'm sure he'll still do a job. But yeah, I think it will be won on the wings and up front. I don't think midfield is where this will be won, because there'll just be a lot of long balls to Benteke, and then I think the nippy wingers will obviously cause problems. So in my opinion, it'll be won if we keep Benteke quiet, and it'll be won if we can keep their wingers under control.
Scoreline, what are you going for?
2-0 the Villa. I think we should. Well, this is our best chance to get another clean sheet. I want Watkins to score. And if I'm going to pick anyone in our team to score, I want to see Target on the score sheet. But I also want Jack to come on and maybe score as well. But I'll be happy with a Watkins goal, and I'll be happy with a clean sheet, and I'll be happy with a win.
I'm going 3-1. I think Benteke is going to score. Or Ayew. It'll be Ayew, Benteke, or Kale. It'll be one of them three.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to go Watkins and a Jack Brace.
Oh, so, wow.
Yes. Welcome back, Jack. before we go, the poll question this week, it's a bit different. Who is our best defender from the back four? So you can pick any one of them.
Oh my God, you got me there. Jeez. As in our best defender this season?
Yeah. This season. Who's our best defender? So Cash, Target, Mings or Konsa?
It's between, in my opinion, it's between Konsa and Target. Okay. I'm going to go for Target.
Okay. Why? Why do you choose Target?
I can't say Cash. He's missed a few games and stuff, and he's played really, really well, but he's got injured, so he's probably not produced. He's not been maybe the Cash that we had at the start of the season, towards the end of the season. So, unfortunately, he's not done it. Mings, very inconsistent. Still a very, very good centre-back. I mean, you don't play for England for no reason, but I do think he's got a mistake in him, and we've all seen it. Konsa, fantastic season, but just for the sheer consistent good performances for this season, in my opinion, I think Target smashed it. Yes, he's not scored as many goals as last season, but I think Jack being injured has had a major effect on that, because Jack and Target have got a good partnership, there's always a goal in it. But the improvement that Target's made from last season, every game, in my opinion, is a 7 or an 8 out of 10. It's like marginal between Konsa and Target. But I just think Target's had a stupidly good season so far.
Well, before I say mine, the poll is up. And I'll just let you know who's fourth. Obviously, it's only been up so long, but fourth is Cash, to be fair. So the Villa fans kind of agree with what you're saying. Konsa for me, there's a lot of highlight, as you said, on Mings playing for England, but he's kind of been the silent majority, if I'm honest, between Villa fans, that Konsa is the better centre-half. For me, it's just Rolls-Royce. I mean, also, like, obviously, he scored some vital goals as well for us. But he's just so calm on the ball, and he's just a very good, like, I'm not going to say Mings is just a hoof, you know, rose edit every time, because he does make some important challenges like he did in the Everton game. But Carl's just kind of consistently good, like he doesn't make the mistakes Mings does. It was a toss-up between Target and Konsa for me. And like you say, Target doesn't score that many goals, but Konsa kind of does in a way, you know, from big man at the, you know, back post kind of thing. But
yeah,
Konsa for me is the one that I think's been one of the big reasons behind our clean sheets. Obviously, all four of them, including Martinez, the 5, deserve praise. But I don't know. I just think Konsa's just edges it for me.
As I said, it's like marginal between them both. I'm literally just going off, in my opinion, from last season. Target's main flaw was that he would have an awesome game. I'm talking 9 out of 10 game. And then the following game, he'll get like a 4 out of 10. Now, this season, Target's completely changed it. But on the other hand, like I said, how marginal it is, Konsa's just smashing it now. Konsa's like England level. Like I'm talking, Konsa should be taken to the World Cup. Not to start the World Cup, but he should be there to replace Maguire, because I think it will be either Stones and Cody or Stones and Mings, because I don't think Maguire will be ready for the World Cup. So Konsa will be like a backup centre-back, if you know what I mean, because I don't think no other centre-back apart from the ones that are normally England team are actually anywhere near him at the moment. And like you said, he hasn't got that mistake in him like Mings has. So yeah, as I said, it's marginal between them both. But I'm just every podcast I'm just singing Target's praise, because it's just another good performance all the time. But like what you're pointing out, a whole back 5 has been spot on. So I'm just thankful that we've got this really good back, solid back 5, because I don't think we've had this sort of solid back 5 for ages. I can't remember a time where I've been this comfortable.
Probably, obviously, we matched Brad Friedel. So I'm going to assume it was, Melberg, Larsson, Warnock and Luke Young, or Rio Coker, or Craig Gardner was ever playing right back.
Yeah.
Whatever O'Neill fans did at right back. Probably, I don't know the season where he kept his 15 clean sheets, but I'm going to assume it's that one with Melberg, Larsson.
It may have been as well. I don't know if it was the season. I mean, we should have done our research, but Richard Dunn and James Collins as well.
Oh, yeah, maybe. Yeah. Do you know what? That's a good show, actually. You're probably sure.
I mean, I don't know for sure. I'm just saying what partnerships that we've had, but I'm sure they were, I'm sure Frieda was in front of them, or was it given? I can't remember which one now.
I'm not sure. Well, it's either going to be one of those two.
Yeah, it is. And don't get me wrong, it's really good, but even with them, I never felt as comfortable as I did with this. I just think our keeper is probably the best keeper that we've had for a very long time. I'm talking since Bodsnitch. So better than Given, better than Friedel, better than, I said anyone's better than Guzan, but better than any keeper that we've had for such a long time. And the back 5 just picks itself, because that's how good they are at the moment. And it only bodes as well for next season, because we can still improve our back 5 by getting decent backups. So a decent backup centre-back to help Courtney House, because I think the Bjorn Angles thing, I think it's just over now, isn't it? It's just a bit weird that he hasn't played. Obviously, we need a backup left back. I don't think we need to buy a backup right back with Gilbert and the young lad Cash like coming in. So, yeah, we're looking in a good place. And you work from the back forward. So this season, we worked on our defence to keep clean sheets, and that's obviously works. So next season, let's spend the money in attack.
Yeah, I think that's the route we're going to go down. To be fair, like I say, just a couple. I would say cheap players at the back, but just some, you know, just decent that can push target or eventually succeed him if he pushes on. Do you know what I mean? Something like that. I did put up on Twitter earlier that Ryan Bertrand's leaving Southampton. I know he's not a young upcoming player, but I wouldn't mind him back. I mean, obviously he was on loan with us many moons ago, but I wouldn't mind Bertrand on a season, you know, just to fill a gap, so we can have more money elsewhere. But a few Villa fans was kind of on the fence. So what about you?
If his wage isn't stupid, because he's a left back and he's quite old now, so say if we can get him for 30 to 40 or even 50k, that's fine, because that's sort of like the average for a Premiership player. But if us getting him on a free will free up funds to get someone else in, and then the following season we can get another left back, and Bertrand is happy with being a backup left back, then I haven't got a problem at all, because he is like a wing back. He is like target. He will get up and down the field. He's a natural athlete, so his stamina is quite good. So if you said to me he'll be our backup left back for next season, he's an improvement on Neil Taylor. Well, my cat is an improvement on Neil Taylor, but he's an improvement on Neil Taylor. So yeah, I would be happy with that, because it fills a spot for one season. And if that means we can spend that 10 or 15 million on something else, then yeah. So yeah, I would be happy with that. I don't think anyone that knows football wouldn't think it's a bad idea. I think it'd be really good. And yes, he's slightly older, but he'll do a job for the few games that we need him.
Yeah, I mean, like, another one that I saw, I mean, I don't want to talk transfers too much, obviously, like we always do. But, like, because we're talking about Palace, their left back, which is Mitchell, I think he's in, like, 22, 23, and he's not signed a new deal and his contract's up. And I quite like him. I mean, he plays quite a bit for Palace. I'm trying to think who is their fullback. I can't think of the top of my head.
Is it Van Arnold?
Yes, Van Arnold. Yes, it's him and Van Arnold and Mitchell. Both of their contracts are up, I believe. But I know that Mitchell is. And I wouldn't mind taking a punt to him. I mean, like, while we're talking about Palace, if you know anything about him, but he's a young lad. Again, like I said, I know Villa fans are kind of expecting us to go a bit like Galacticos and spend stupid amount of money, but, you know, they're not. Turn our nose up if there's a decent free transfer or a loan out there. I mean, like, obviously, no one expected Barkley to be as bad as he was, but when we took Barkley on loan, everyone was kind of buzzing. So there's no reason why we can't do that again.
No, 100%. And I'm not going to lie, I don't know much about that Mitchell kid. I know a limited amount about Van Alten, but this Mitchell kid, I don't know much. I don't want to say yes or no. So I literally don't know what to say, because I don't know him. But if he fits our bill of young, hungry players, then I trust the process. I trust our transfer process 100% now. So if he went from, yeah, awesome, I just don't know that much to really not have an opinion, but to say yes or no. But it seems to me, don't get me wrong, I don't know much about Crystal Palace, but Crystal Palace might be in trouble next season if a lot of these players are going.
I think they're going to, if I'm honest. They don't really spend much money anyways. Never have done, really. Like I say, their only benefit they've got is they're in London. For some reason, footballers love London. Like, that's how they got Etse. Because if they was based in Yorkshire or the Midlands, they would have had no chance of getting him. So I think, because obviously they need to buy a new, they're basically in the position we were when we come up and we spent 120 million on 10 players or whatever it was. Yeah. They're kind of in the same position, but they need a manager on top. So, and obviously we struggled massively. So yeah, I think they're gonna go.
I've seen on Twitter that Frank Lampard is odds to be their manager. Although obviously it's just odd, so obviously don't mean he's going to be it. But apparently Frank Lampard's been looked at to be the next manager of Crystal Palace.
Well, there you go. Says it all. Another London club for another London lad. So that, to be fair, it might be a decent fit, to be fair, because everyone knows and everyone knew at the time that Lampard was too soon to go to Chelsea. It was too big of a move, especially with how quickly Roman Abramovich pulls the trigger. You haven't got time to find your feet, let alone manage, you know, for years to come. You've got to hit the ground running. He should have stayed at Derby, but same thing. Derby, as soon as he left, they almost went down. They've been nowhere near as good as they were under Lampard. So, you know, that's kind of like a little good thing for him. And obviously, he went to Chelsea being his boy, you know, being a legend there, which, you know, we all understand. If, you know, if we offer Walk as much as he wants it, you know, you take it because of being a legend at our club. So I kind of got the reason behind it, but he needs to have a project. And I always said that. If he needs something like a Palace where if they say to him, if we go down, we're going to keep you. If you keep us up, great. And, you know, something like that. Or even something like the Albion, if they get rid of Big Sam. Something where he's got a project and they go, look, no matter what, obviously, if you're fighting bottom of the Championship, we're going to let you go. But if you're in and around the playoffs or top two, we're going to keep you on. And you've got 3 years to get us back in the Prem, if that's like an Albion case, or if it's a Palace one. Try and keep us in the Prem if we go down. You know, we want to be making playoffs for the next two seasons at least, and up in the third. You know, we need something like that rather than, you know, you first, you know, done a year in management and then next thing you know, you're managing a top four side. It was too soon. So, as you say, if it is a chance of him going to Palace, it kind of makes sense.
No, it does. And I'm not saying that the Crystal Palace chairman's cheap, but obviously, he's basically on a free as well, isn't he? So it ain't going to cost him much either. But talking about Sam Allardyce, I don't think he'll be West Brom manager because he's going to want money and I don't think West Brom have got a lot of it. But talking about West Brom, every time West Brom is mentioned on Twitter, it's all about, we want Pereira. And that's pretty much most fans. And we spoke quite in depth about this the other day. And I think the majority of Villa fans actually want him.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that comes to mind with Pereira that is something we've not had all season long is a set-piece taker.
Yeah.
And Pereira fits that bill. Okay, he's not like a Hourihan who's pretty much got set-pieces in his locker and the odd worldy goal and that's it. But Pereira's got the legs, he's got the skill, he's creative, he can score goals. And, you know, I am quite jealous they've got him, you know, especially when they paid $8 million. But if we end up getting him, I'll be more than happy. As you said, we spoke in depth about it last time, but I concur with all the Villa fans that he's somebody that we need. And like you say, he's not going to break the bank. He's not going to be 50, 60 million. You know, you're probably getting for 20 to 30 million, I'd say. Yeah. He lives in the area. We said that he's Brazilian and he knows, you know, obviously Douglas Luiz and Wesley and whatever, we've got those links. Just get him. Just go and get him. It's just as easy. I mean, obviously, it's probably not as easy as that. But he just fits the bill for me.
He does, and it sounds daft, but it's all right us saying that we should get him and stuff. But I really think, by the looks of it, by all the rumours and stuff, that we're actually interested in him. But it'll obviously be down to the player if he will walk over from West Brom to Birmingham. But I don't think he's that bothered, if I'm going to be honest. I'll be surprised if that even bothers him, because we can pay him more. We can offer him better football. We can offer him Premiership football. I mean, I don't think he'll be at West Brom next season.
No, he definitely won't be playing Championship football. I'd probably say he's the only... Him and Johnston are probably the only two I could see going. Even Johnston, I'm not 100%, not because I don't think he's good enough. It's just that what, you know, Premier League club out there needs a new number one. I mean, you might look at Palace, as we spoke about, with them so many players going. I don't know if that Guetta's contract's up, although I think it is. You know, they might look at him on a cheap. I can't really see where you'd go unless, you know, somebody's contract's up like Palace's or something. But Pereira, I think he'll be... I could probably see him moving before the Euros even starts, to be honest.
I mean, I'm sure I saw, heard an interview from Smith on Twitter, and he said about the transfers we're linked, the targets that we're trying to get are like, you know, a bit breathtaking, and I'm very impressed. So the fans will be impressed as well. So that makes me think we've linked some very good people. And by the looks of it, because he also said we've got a lot of plates already spinning, and we've been planning for this window for a long, long time. So that makes me think we're going to make a lot of moves quite early doors.
Yeah, that's what I think. I think, unlike a transfer, I like to have one a week, if I'm honest, just to keep the week interesting. But if we go into the summer and pretty much within the first 3 weeks, Smith comes out and says, yeah, that's us wrapped up now. It's going to be a bit of a boring window. However, from a footballing standpoint, to get them in, get them training, get to know the lads, get them settled in the area, get them to know our pre-season, yada, yada, yada. It makes perfect sense. I think we're going to have a massive bulk of our business done early doors, and maybe like the ones that will come towards the end is either like links that have come up late on, you know, because obviously there always talks about Tammy. You know, you don't know what's going to happen with that. Mate, you know, that's going to happen for me, being such a big move and a lot of money being spoke about, that's going to be end of the season. Like, you know, like I wouldn't say, well, I'd love a deadline day move for Tammy on a permanent. That'd be sensational. But like I say, I think we'll have about 75% of the business done early doors.
Yeah, and I think, like you just said, to get that done is spot on, because of pre-season, to get everyone team building, it's ideal. But if we get any of the players that we're sort of linked to, or spend the money that we're linked to, like we're linked to Buendina from Norwich, that's going to be 35 million. Do I think he'll be a good signing? Yes, he's probably the best midfielder in the Championship, and he's he'll probably be one of the top 10, top 15, I'd say about between top 15, top 20 midfielders in the Premier League if he does what we think he can do. We're linked with Pereira. We're linked to some very good players, and if we get Hart, I mean, Tammy, things like if we spend the money, what we think we're spending, because I think it'll be 100 to 150 again. So it could be another busy, busy summer, and this could be the transfer window that pushes us into top six.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a mega season for ins and outs, if I'm honest. I think we'll see. Obviously, we've got a lot of players up like Taylor, Elmo. What's going to happen with Gilbert? We don't know yet. Will Trezeguet, El Ghazi move on? What's going to happen with Barkley? That's just players that are already in the squad that we don't know what's going to happen. You know, will Davis or Wesley go to make space for a Tammy or whoever it's going to be? So, you know, there's, like I said, there's spinning plates, as I said. It could involve, obviously, I think it's going to involve players leaving just as much as players coming in. Yeah. But I think there's going to be a big turnover of players coming and going, where we're trying to get rid of the lesser players and try and bring in top quality. So I know there's going to be people out there expecting to sign another 10 players again. But I think it's going to be more 5 or 6, probably. But it's going to be 3 or 4 top end £30 million plus players. And then 2 or 3 kind of, I wouldn't say like cheapskate deals, but, you know, like a couple of players where I'm like kids, you know, that we're going to push on, that have been brought in at a cheaper price, or maybe a loan, something like that. I think that's what we're going to do. Like I say, you can't build Rome in a day, like, so it kind of just needs to be done slowly. But we've improved on last season, we improved our standing, so hopefully the pool of players we can get are obviously good ones.
Oh, 100%. I think it will be a mixture of, I think we'll break our transfer window thing again. I think we'll sign someone for 40 million plus. We will get those sort of players. We'll get probably 2 or 3 of those players, but then we've also, we'll push onto our youth, because we seem heavily invested in our youth. So I think we'll probably get, like what you said, 4 or 5 world-class players, and then we'll use our youth. I can also see players like Tom Heaton. Obviously, he's already, there's rumours of him going to United. He will go. You've got Bjorn Engels. I think he will go maybe back to... He'll probably go back. Taylor and Elmo's contracts are both up. I think Hourihane will go. I think Davis and Barry will go out on loan. I think maybe El Ghazi might even get picked up by someone. And suddenly, that's like 5 or 6 players. And you think to yourself, we need depth again. So, yes, we will look into youth, but we will be getting these players, your 40. I mean, it'll be really good for us. I don't know who it's going to be, and I don't want to speculate, and I don't want to say what position it's for, but for us to spend like 50 million on one player.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think we'll break the record. I think it'll probably be about 35, maybe 40 with all the add-ons and all that. But I think because the amount of players we've got to sign, you know, like when you see like a Chelsea or someone like that, they normally sign two players, probably like 120 million over the two. Boy, I think we need a bit more than that. We're probably going to look at the 50 mil mark probably next season. If we can finish top eight end of next season, then I think we will be looking at 50 million plus players. But I think for this season, I think we're still going to be looking at the maybe a one off 40 and then a couple of 30s or, you know, mid 30 million pound players. But at the end of the day, you could easily spend 72 million like Arsenal did in, was it Saka they paid that for? No, Pepe, no. Sorry. Pepe,
yeah.
Paid 72 million for him and he was in his tripe. So, you know what I mean? Like, we paid, what, 2.5-3 million for McGinn and he's sensational. So, do you know what I mean? Like, as long as you find the gems, you know what I mean? A lot of people, like, I mean, I was one of those that when we signed McGinn for 3 million, I was like, oh, you know, like, a lot of people was raving about him who watched Scottish football. Obviously, I'm not one of those people. And then you're like, oh, God, we spent 3 million. No, he ain't going to really, that's going to be no better than Onuma. You know what I mean? What's the point? Yeah. But then you look at how he turned out. So, like I say, if you can pick up these gems, that's all that matters. But like you say, obviously, we want to see some world-class players coming in.
I'll give you another example of a poor 17 million spent. That Chelsea keeper that's currently the most sick. Isn't he the most expensive keeper ever?
Yeah, yeah.
And he's terrible. Yeah, he's worked his way back into the Chelsea team by the looks of it, but he's absolutely dire. Like Kieran Dyer, he's awful. But again, we've done our podcast and we've gone into 10, 15 minutes of transfer stuff. This is how much we want to talk about transfer stuff. So
we're nearly there. We're nearly at the end.
We're nearly at the end of the season, and there would be podcasts. There is going to be podcasts, sorry, of just pure transfer talk. Once there's more targets being sought after, it's hard for us to really say anything. We're just talking about the players that we want. We're not saying we know anything. We're not in the nose, as a lot of people may call themselves. We just see the rumours, who we're linked to, and we give our honest opinion on it, if it is worth it or not. So we're just going through names that we've seen that are linked. So we don't know anything. We're just going off what people say that we're linked to. But we're going to finish it now because literally this could go on for another hour talking about transfers and we don't want to do that yet. So we're going to leave it there now. And we will be recording another episode, obviously, after the game on Sunday. Hopefully about 3 points. It'll be nice. At least a point. I won't be happy if we're doing a podcast if we lost, but we'll do one anyway if we do, but I'm quite confident it'll be a point or three. But apart from that, thank you very much for tuning in. And I keep forgetting to say this on the past few podcasts, but if you don't follow us, sorry, please follow us on Twitter and Facebook. We do appreciate it. And if you've got any ideas or any suggestions for the podcast that may improve it, please just drop a message to the Twitter or Facebook group so we can obviously have a look at it and see what we can do to improve it, because we're always looking at ways to try and make it better and more beneficial and more fun for everyone to listen to. So we're going to leave it there, and thank you very much, and up the Villa.
Thanks, guys. See you again.